Professor Leonie Rennie is the Emeritus Professor at the School of Research and Development at Curtin University. Her background is in science teaching in West Australian schools, and she was involved in teacher education programs at the University of Western Australia before taking up a position at Curtin University. She has published widely in science and technology education, and some of her recent work includes a book on integrated curriculum and exploring children's behaviour at interactive exhibits and the influences of science in schools. Professor Rennie will be one of the presenters at the Big Science Communication Summit held on the 6th and 7th of June in Sydney this year. Leonie, looking over your recent research and writing, it seems like you've been very busy investigating integrated curriculums and the influence of science museums and field trips. What are some of the findings that have fascinated you?
Well, I think let's take integration first.
Okay.
You're probably referring to a couple of books that my colleagues, John Wallace, who's now in Toronto, and Grady Venville at the University of Western Australia, have had published over the last year. And we looked at integrated curriculum because we know that the world is integrated.
Yeah.
If you look at a school timetable in high school, you have lesson for physics and lesson for chemistry and lesson for biology in upper school, or just science maybe in lower school. But it's not connected with all of the other disciplines like things are in the real world. Mm-hmm. And that's a block, we felt, to kids being able to associate the science they did at school with the science that's in the outside world. Mm-hmm. And so we had quite an extensive research program over probably 10 to 15 years, really, mm-hmm. both here and in Canada. And the books were a result of our thinking about that. And we came to the conclusion that there were two things that could give students a really good basis for what we call knowledge that counts in a global community, which is the title of one of our books. And that was that what we wanted to see in curriculum was balance and connection. And in terms of balance, what we wanted to see was a balance between disciplinary knowledge, like the physics and the calculus and the high status science subjects, and integrated knowledge, which is, environmental science, for example, is integrated compared to, say, physics.
Yeah.
And a balance between those two things, because we thought that would give the kids opportunities to actually develop knowledge that was powerful in the sense that it helped them make sense of the outside world. And the other thing was connection. We believe that if you can get schools out and connect with problems and issues in the community, then there's an opportunity to take them at a higher and more abstract level to more global issues. So what we wanted to see was connection between what's happening locally and what's going on globally. And so they were the two things that we've pushed in those two volumes, ways to help achieve what we call balance and connection in the community.
Yeah. Cross-curricular is a tremendous challenge, though. I mean, as a former English teacher, we've been told, OK, you have to go work with the science and maths teachers, you get trepidation and worry. And
yes, yeah. It's the old English teacher was saying, well, I'll teach them to spell, you teach them the science words.
And, yeah. That's such a sad way of seeing it, though. It's like, yeah, but I don't do that in the real world, though. Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. But I've heard that in the, when if teachers claim that the kids can't spell, the science that's teachers say, oh, well, that's the English department's problem. Integrated curriculum have had, they've been top of the pops and then they've been the bottom of the list in education over probably at least four decades now. And one of the reasons is it's just so hard to implement. And it's hard to implement because it challenges what you might call the grammar of schooling, that is the way things are done in schools, particularly in high schools, where you've got this rich administrative structure and curriculum timetable, which makes it really hard. Mm-hmm. And my other interest in, sort of associated interest in learning science outside of school, is that this timetable makes it really, really hard for teachers to get kids out of the classroom mm-hmm. and into the community. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I agree it's hard, but it can't. We're just not going to progress unless we can do something that helps us to get kids more attuned to what's going on in the community and how it's connected with what they're doing at school.
Yeah. And it's not as if revolutions in education aren't happening all the time anyway.
Well, we're told about education revolutions mm-hmm. and Yeah, I suppose it's the old analogy of turning around the juggernaut, you know.
Whatever, yeah.
You know. Very difficult to change the direction of a train that's on a long straight track that it's been on for a very long time.
Yeah. But you're also interested in science museums and outreach and field trips, which people always say, you know, oh, there's always this opportunity outside of school. What does your recent research indicate about that?
Basically, what's happening is that there's field trips have always been teachers will agree field trips are a great thing, but then they'll say, well, they're really hard to organise. And now what with this problem about, you know, ethics and insurance, it's really hard to get them out, and there's the expense of organising transport to take them to wherever. But the research shows very clearly that there are very positive outcomes from field trips. And I'm including their field trips that are field work in the environment, for example. You really can't do environmental education without getting outside into the classroom, even if it's, you know, the school grounds, providing you've got some
tossing the set square.
Exactly. I think the sorts of things that really interest me about those things are the ways that you let you get out and do the sorts of things I was talking about in terms of finding out about the science that happens in the community. And there are huge programs now, international programs that are available through the web on related to citizen science, for example, where you can get people who are just interested in building protein structures or whatever. I forget the name of the website that deals with that, but there's just a whole range of things in astronomy, in various biological sciences, even maths and physics, where you're getting people just logging in and working on a problem that scientists have looked at for years and then suddenly figuring out a solution. So this participatory public science approach has been facilitated enormously by the internet. But there are other little ones too. That, for example, one of the ones that I really loved was, let me think, it must have been about 20 years ago, getting on for 20 years ago, the CSIRO had one where they had kids all over Australia looking for dung beetles. just go out into the paddock and find some dung and filter it out for dung beetles, sort them out into different types, and then put samples in little vials, put them in the freezer to kill them humanely, and then send them off to us. And that gave an enormously huge picture of dung beetle populations across Australia that scientists would never have had the opportunity to do themselves.
That's true.
Unfortunately, the funding for dung beetles in WA sort of eased off a while ago, and so the flies are back, because controlling dung beetles looking after dung beetles, I should say, controls flies. They're the sorts of things that get me excited. Kids out there doing things that really matter.
So these sorts of things are great influences. Other influences out there that inspire you?
Well, the things that are hitting museums and science centres at the moment, I think there are two things, and they're related. The first one is a lot of these places rely on public funding to maintain their viability, really, their financial viability. In the US, I think about a quarter of the funding for some of them comes from endowments. Science centres don't have many endowments, mainly because they're young, and the museums, you know, tend to be a lot older, the traditional museums, and they get the endowments. In Australia, we don't nearly have the extent of endowments that they have in the US and other places. And so the need for funding to keep the institution viable is something that now has become a threat, I think, to the educational mission of these places, that they actually have to keep thinking how we're going to get people in, not just how can we do our best to help people become more educated. In my case, I'm interested in how they get more educated about science. The second thing is keeping up and keeping relevant in terms of technology. Now we've got digital technologies that kids come in with, their smartphones and what have you. To keep relevant, museums have to be able to cope with this new digital environment. And so a lot of science centres and museums now are developing ways to help increase engagement through the use of mobile technologies. So, for example, they might develop an app that's associated with an exhibition. So that, for example, one I'm thinking of in Maryland, I think, an astronomy exhibition, kids could come in, they could download a free app, and then they could link in with particular exhibitions they were at with their phone. They can answer some questions, and if they got them right, they got Astrobucks. And these Astrobucks they could spend at the shop on the way out.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, so that's something that was working pretty well. There are other ones that you can use on school field trips that museums might set up, and this has been done in Norway, set up a blog, and as they come in, the kids can work at their assignments that their teachers have sent, and they blog and take photos and put them up on this site. Yeah. And then they go back to school, by which time everyone in the class has had a chance to look at what everyone else did and make comments on it. So when they develop their assignment, they can actually do it with critique from the other kids in the class. That's all done via the internet. Mm-hmm. And so they can also do it at home, of course. And so it kind of makes for a continuity. It's been called seamless learning, sort of continuity between home, school and other places, aided by mobile technologies.
Now, of course, at the conference there's a number of themes that we're all going to be investigating. Which ones pique your interest?
Well, actually, I'm just looking at the list again, and they're all pretty exciting, but the one that I'm really interested in, I guess, is the data at work one, called Data at Work, Using the Evidence Base to Guide Future Action. And the reason I've been interested in that is that I've been involved in one of the DESERT committees that's been developing that evidence base. Okay. And we've had four kinds of projects going. We had one which really was a national audit that you probably heard about.
Absolutely, Inspiring Australia.
Exactly, the Inspiring Australia audit that was the Australian Touch Communicators took control of that, with working with eConnect. And that developed a very comprehensive picture of what's happening across Australia in all sorts of science community activities. We had another one that was doing a search of database, both of the kinds of reports that sit on shelves, the sort of what's called the grey literature as well as the published literature. That was coordinated by CPAS at ANU and the University of Queensland. And another one is developing a fairly generic tool that can be used to measure outcomes from things like the National Science Week programs, for example, and it was piloted last year, national pilot in various programs, I think about 1,800 responses which have been analysed. So the idea is to use that and build a tool that is very easy to use from people. We've got a project going now that by looking at what we found in those other projects that I just mentioned, we're looking at the gaps. And trying to do something about filling the gaps. So there will be a survey is being developed at the moment, aiming for a pilot in about towards the end of April this month, to try to measure the impact, not just the, you know, what did you enjoy what you were doing and so on and so forth, but the impact over time of the public's attitudes to various things. Some case studies that are related to particular events and how they affected the people that attended to them. So this evidence base is being built, still got a couple of years to run the program, and I think that will be of great benefit to people who want to, A, improve what they're doing, B, hopefully close down things that aren't working and are therefore wasteful of both time and resources, and thirdly, find the audiences that are being missed and find ways to attract them.
Brilliant. Oh, we've got lots to talk about.
Indeed.
Cool. Thank you so much for talking to me, Leonie.
A pleasure. A pleasure, Kylie.